Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, August 24th. City to earmark oil revenue for parks maintenance. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will begin dedicating revenue made from drilling under the City of Midland property to the maintenance of parks across the city. The council decided Tuesday to allocate $2 million originally slated for the Oil and Gas Special Purpose Fund and create a Parks Maintenance Stabilization Fund. The amount will help with maintenance of parks, current and future, that have been built or will be constructed. Parks have received considerable attention from this council, in addition to improvements at Reyes Mashburn Nelms in East Midland. The council is considering a $35-plus million upgrade to Beale Park in southwest Midland. Upgrades taking place across parks in Midland include the installation of turf and other quality-of-place enhancements. Those enhancements increase costs when replacements or maintenance is required. The poster child for the deficits that parks can incur is at the Scarborough Sports Complex, which has seen a balance in an operation fund drop from around $30 million to $13.1 million in less than a decade. The council said Tuesday, dedicating money now and in the future from the Oil and Gas Special Purpose Fund will help take the burden off the general fund and taxpayers. The council pushed $2 million of the $20.1 million that was supposed to be moved from the general fund to the Parks Oil and Gas Special Purpose Fund into this special maintenance account. The expectation is city staff will come back to the council with estimates of future Parks Department maintenance costs to current and future parks to help determine how much to move regularly toward maintenance. Quote, "We are saddling future taxpayers with the maintenance cost of those facilities," Mayor Lori Blong said Tuesday. "We want the facilities, but we need to do that in a prudent way, allocating capital dollars to future maintenance," end quote. The City Council previously passed a resolution that moved oil and gas revenues generated by city-owned park property in the Oil and Gas Special Purpose Fund. City leaders learned Tuesday that account will have around $48.3 million in it at the end of the fiscal year. City leaders also learned Tuesday that there are $12.5 million in Park Oil and Gas Fund projects in the fiscal year 2024 budget, including $6.5 million for two auxiliary fields at the Scarborough Sports Complex, $2.5 million for improvements to the Southeast Senior Center, $2.5 million for the new Senior Center designs, and $1 million for a golf cart barn. City leaders also want to move forward to the Hogan Park upgrades. YWLA parents take issue with MISD decision. Midland ISD tells YWLA parents that students playing for MHS Legacy to end after this year. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. At last week's Midland ISD board meeting, multiple speakers took issue with the district decision to prevent young Women's Leadership Academy students from being able to participate in varsity athletics with their home campuses beginning with the 2024-25 school year. Currently, YWLA students can compete at Midland High or Legacy since YWLA doesn't offer varsity athletics. However, the district announced this would be the last year. Parents of YWLA students believe the district committed to the students the opportunity to not only attend the girls-only academy and in-district charter, but have athletic opportunities at Midland ISD's Class 6A comprehensive campuses. According to Ryan Parrish, that was the arrangement. His daughter plays sports, including tennis, at Midland High. Quote, "This isn't what the board agreed to or asked for when the foundations of YWLA were designed over 4 years ago," Parrish told the Reporter-Telegram. "The contract stated that they could play for their district campuses," end quote. He added, "The community, students, coaches, principals, parents, and teams were not asked for their feedback in a school board meeting or otherwise before the decision to change the contract was unilaterally made." Quote, "Girls that are already playing for their districted schools on all of the various teams, swim, dive, basketball, volleyball, track, soccer, tennis, etc., will be lost in the cracks of this change with no team to play for," Parrish said. "We need to continue to participate with home schools until we have adequate facilities and trained coaches and trainers. Our school can't be compared to other schools with sports programs, coaches, and facilities," end quote. The Young Women's Preparatory Network, based out of Dallas, runs YWLA in Midland. An attempt to reach the network's leadership was unsuccessful. In a joint statement from Midland ISD and Young Women's Leadership Academy, officials stated that the decision brings to light the need for strong athletic programs within YWLA. Quote, "Therefore, the Midland ISD Athletics Department will be working closely with the leadership team at YWLA over the next year to assist in the development and strengthening of their athletics program," the statement said. No particulars were offered by the district or YWLA about what sports would begin in 2024-25, what facilities would be used, or operations of the athletics program itself. A problem, according to Parrish, is that Midland ISD moved YWLA into the former Washington STEM Elementary School. The school lacks facilities on campus to begin the building of an athletics program that would be fitting of a Midland ISD athletic program. During board meetings leading up to the decision to close Washington STEM for YWLA, athletics really was never a great part of the conversation. Quote, "We have zero facilities, not even a high school-sized gymnasium," Parrish wrote. Continuing the quote, "The district is not offering an equal opportunity to these Midland girls. They are taking sports away from girls without any budgeted plan to provide a program at YWLA," end quote. The same agreement is in place for students who make the decision to attend IDEA Travis, another 1882 school. Parrish is among those who believe Midland ISD officials are asking YWLA families to make decisions between the school's heralded academic program and the athletics program at Legacy or Midland High. Quote, "As a top-performing school, YWLA should be fully supported by this district, not put at a disadvantage by board decisions," Parrish wrote. "It makes it harder for YWLA to recruit and keep girls when they cannot offer the same sports opportunities," end quote. Midland ISD reported Wednesday, quote, "The original term of agreement between MISD and Young Women's Preparatory Network for operation of YWLA began on June 1, 2019 and ran through June 30, 2022. The MISD Board of Trustees met and considered a renewal term at the April 19, 2022 regular meeting," At that time, a 5-year renewal term was unanimously approved by the board. More recent negotiations regarding additional changes to MISD's performance agreement with YWPN, including revisions to the UIL provision, have been ongoing for several months. These changes will be finalized and ratified by the board at the upcoming September 19, 2023 regular meeting. End quote. The statement from Midland ISD, YWLA, also includes the following, quote, "We genuinely understand the sentiment about the initial promises made when YWLA was started. Decisions of the past were made with the best intentions based on the information available at that time. As districts grow and evolve, adjustments sometimes become necessary. These decisions are never made lightly and always with the greater good of all students in mind." End quote. Business buzz. A passion for animals fuels Turner & Pooch Pet Resort. The business recently won gold in the Reporter-Telegram's Reader's Choice Awards for both Pet Resort and Pet Sitter categories. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. Turner & Pooch Pet Resort has been a favorite pet boarding option in Midland for the past 2 years. This luxury pet daycare sprouted from the Turner family's lifelong passion for dogs and pets of all kinds. Melissa Turner's parents used to breed and show dogs when she was growing up. This sparked a love for animals and pets at an early age. Melissa and her husband Joe showed dogs until 2008 and decided to settle in Midland in 2009. They built their facility, located south of Midland at 201 East County Road 150, in 2017. Quote, "We grew up around dogs our entire life," Melissa said. "We've always had a passion for dogs, whether showing dogs or just caring for them. They just make your life a lot happier." End quote. Turner and Pooch's detailed pet accommodations creates a secure feeling for pet owners and optimal conditions for their four-legged guests. Quote, "All of our suites have all glass panels, so the dogs can see out rather than being in an enclosed room where they can't see what's going on," Melissa said. "TVs are everywhere, fans, and we dim the lights down for nap time during the day and nighttime. TVs always stay on, so it makes it more homey feeling." End quote. An important accommodation, according to the Turners, is their ability to provide pets with an indoor-outdoor environment. Each Turner and Pooch suite has a doggy door installed so pets can roam outside of their suite. Quote, "We have 4 different play yards, 3 of them are all artificial turf, and we still do have 1 real grass yard. Something about real grass that dogs like to roll in rather than the turf," Melissa said. Turner and Pooch has group play times, so pets can interact with one another, and they accommodate individual play time for certain pets who need it. The pet daycare watches some animals for 1 day, some they board for a month. The Turners' extensive background with pets and animals has allowed them to understand the needs of pets and the emotional connection between pet and owner. Quote, "These are not just animals, they're not just dogs, they're people's family members. It doesn't surprise us because that's how we've always thought about our animals that we've owned. They're a part of our family," Melissa said. "I get it when somebody's dropping their dog off and they're like almost in tears. It's hard leaving them." End quote. The rest of the staff are family members as well. Quote, "It's a family business," Melissa said. "It's just been something that we all absolutely loved, taking care of animals. At any given time, you can come in here and there's one of the kids or one of us sitting in a suite with a dog that's either stressed or just needs some extra attention, end quote. Given the commitment of time and energy necessary to operate a resort like Turner and Pooch, a true love for pets is needed, according to Joe. Quote, I couldn't do this if I didn't love animals, he said. Turner and Pooch Pet Resort recently won the Gold Prize for the Reporter Telegram's Reader's Choice Awards in both the Pet Resort and Pet Sitter categories. Mewbourne Oil becomes PSP's 22nd member. The story was written by Mela McEwen, Oil Editor. Permian's strategic partnership continues to grow, adding three new members this year. The newest company to join is Mewbourne Oil Company, which becomes PSP's 22nd member. Mewbourne's longtime history in the Permian Basin was cited as a motivation for joining the partnership. Quote, I have been very impressed with the great work PSP is doing in the basin, and we are thrilled to be part of this important organization, Ken Waits, Mewbourne's president and chief executive officer, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, Curtis Mewbourne got his start in West Texas in 1965, almost 60 years ago, and we plan on being one of the most active drillers in West Texas and southeast New Mexico for generations to come. We are grateful to have the opportunity to invest in the people and communities that have been so critical for Mewbourne's success. End quote. He noted that over half of Mewbourne's staff called the Permian Basin home. Tracy Bentley, PSP's president and chief executive officer, noted Mewbourne's long history in welcoming the company to the partnership. Quote, Mewbourne Oil Company has been a fixture of the Permian Basin for the past 50 years. By welcoming them as our 22nd member, we are excited to blend their rich history and community ties with the PSP's collaborative vision, she said in a statement. Together, we will continue to advance education, healthcare, workforce development, and road safety, making lasting impacts on our communities across the region. We are honored to have Mewbourne on the PSP team. End quote. She added by email to the Reporter Telegram, quote, Ken Waits and his team at Mewbourne will bring their passion, talent, and leadership to PSP at a critical time for the Permian Basin. As the country and the world continue to look to our region for energy security, we must continue to build and improve the necessary infrastructure to make sure our families thrive. Mewbourne shares this vision and makes them a perfect fit for the PSP. End quote. Driller Helmrich and Payne joined PSP the first of the year, and Champion X joined last month, continuing the expansion of PSP from the original 17 companies that combined to form PSP in early 2019. The focus is on addressing the needs of Permian Basin counties in the areas of education, healthcare, workforce training, infrastructure, and housing. PSP members are Apache, BPX Energy, Champion X, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, Coterra Energy, Devon Energy, Diamondback Energy, Endeavor Energy Resources, EOG Resources, ExxonMobil, Halliburton, Helmrich and Payne, Kinetic, Mewbourne Oil Company, Occidental, Ovintiv, Permian Resources, Pioneer Natural Resources, Plains All-American SLB, and Waterbridge Resources. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, August 24th. Timothy Noel Kalani Manning was born on December 17, 1975, in Oxnard, California, to Tom and Donna Manning. Tim moved to Midland with his family in 1981. Tim attended Midland High School, where he played golf and graduated in 1994. Tim was actively involved in his church youth group at Golf Course Road Church of Christ. He attended Texas Tech University, where he graduated with his BBA in August 1998. After dating for 6 years, he and his high school sweetheart, Cheney, married in 1998. They celebrated 25 years of marriage. Tim is survived by his wife, Cheney Manning, children Luke, Ryan, and Emily, his brothers Todd Manning and wife Mindy, and daughter Ella of Austin, Texas, Treg Manning and wife Guadalupe and their daughters Gabriella and Reagan of Midland. Tim was preceded in death by his parents Tom and Donna Manning. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Opportunity Tribe, Wounded Warriors, Convoy of Hope, and Maui Relief. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 24th, at the branch at NPW. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, August 25th, at Golf Course Road Church of Christ, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com. Philip Adnip, also known as Phil Adnip of Midland, passed away on August 10th. The celebration of his life will be Monday, August 28th at 11 a.m. at First Baptist Church Worship Center in Midland, officiated by Dr. Darren Wood and Dr. Daniel Vestal. Phil was born April 18, 1978 in Houston, Texas, to Mike Adnip and Myra Dixon Adnip. He graduated from Midland High School in 1996. He received his Bachelor of Business Administration and Marketing from Texas Tech University in 2002. Following graduation, he returned to Midland to begin a career as an independent petroleum landman. He worked for a brokerage firm, lawyers, and independent oil companies. He is survived by his parents, Myra and Mike Adnip, brothers Mark Adnip and wife Amy, and their daughters, Channing and Ashton of the Woodlands, Texas, Stuart Adnip and wife Kristen, children Grady, Hugh, and Bessie of Fort Worth, Texas, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to Buckner Family Place, 421 West Pecan, Midland, Texas, 79705. James Henry Esman, also known as Jim Esman, age 90, formerly of Midland, passed away on Saturday, August 5th. He was born February 23, 1933, to Walter and Louise Esman of Tulsa, Oklahoma. He attended Oklahoma A&M University in Stillwater, Oklahoma, for 3 semesters, and then transferred to the University of Tulsa, where he completed his degree in business administration. He graduated 7th in his law school class. While attending law school at night, he worked full-time in the first gas department of Amerada Petroleum Corporation and became the administrative assistant and bailiff to Whit Y. Mazzi, the county judge of Tulsa County. After passing the Oklahoma bar exam, Shell closed its Tulsa office and transferred him to their Wichita Falls office and then later to their division office in Midland. In Midland, he continued to work for Shell as a lease and title analyst and later landman. After 10 years of employment, he resigned from Shell in 1967 to become an independent petroleum landman and primarily worked on drilling deals, the purchase of oil and gas leases, as well as investing in minerals and royalties up until shortly before his death. He was preceded in death by his parents, Walter and Louise Essman, his grandson, Mitchell Brandt, and his brother-in-law, Don Harold. He is survived by his wife, Sandy Pearson of Austin, by his daughters, Linda Louise Brandt and her husband, Tom of Midland, Lisa Essman Hardaway of New Braunfels, Angela Essman Spencer and her husband, Greg of Midland, and by his son, James W. Essman and his wife, Harriet of Midland. He is also survived by 7 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. In addition, he is survived by his sister, Mary Louise Harold of Tulsa, and several nephews. Services will be held August 28th at 4 p.m. at Holy Trinity Episcopal Church with a reception following at the Petroleum Club of Midland. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests donations in Jim's memory to the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center or to a charity of your choice. Melvin Thomas Hirsch, who had only answered to Tommy, age 96, passed away on August 21st. Tommy was born on March 18, 1927, in New Lexington, Ohio, to Jenny and Clark Hirsch. Along with numerous family and friends, Tommy is survived by his children, Nancy and Milton Kirby of Midland, Julie and Mark Hirsch of Alpine, Texas, and Melissa and Alan White of Midland, special friend Brenda Burnett, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his wife, Weta, and his parents, Jenny and Clark, a great-granddaughter, and a brother, Leland Hirsch. The family will receive guests from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Friday, August 25th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 26th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Resthaven Memorial Park. The family wishes to thank all for the outpouring of love, support, and prayers. In lieu of flowers, please consider donating to Hospice of Midland, Incorporated at 911 West Texas Avenue in Midland, or to his beloved Sacramento Mountain Retreat, where he gave generously of time, talent, and treasure, building, serving, and governing at SMR 7140 Sabre Trail, Amarillo, Texas, 79124. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Heasley St. John Rook, age 81, passed away at his home on August 16th. He was a graduate of Longview High School, Gupton Jones College in Dallas, and New Mexico State University. He joined the Texas National Guard in 1960, was activated in 1961, and later honorably discharged from the U.S. Army in 1966. He was active in the oil and gas industry in Midland, Texas for over 40 years before moving to Conroe to be closer to his grandchildren. He enjoyed spending time at his ranch properties in Comanche and Falls County, Texas for over 30 years. He is survived by his wife of 60 years, Cindy, and sons Brent and Doug, their wives Danielle and Becky. He is also survived by 6 grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents and 3 brothers. Graveside services with military honors will be held at the Houston National Cemetery at 9 a.m. on Thursday, August 24th, followed by a memorial service at the Woodlands Methodist Church in the Ed Robb Chapel at 11:30 a.m., led by Reverend Pierce Drake. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to a charity of your choice. Leopoldo Leo Areola, age 40, passed away on August 20th. A visitation will be held Thursday, August 24th, at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, 1502 North Lamesa Road in Midland, from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. Funeral service will be Friday, August 25th, at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, 1100 Camp Street in Midland, at 10 a.m. Interment will immediately follow at Serenity Memorial Garden Cemetery. Funeral arrangements are under the care and direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Online condolences can be made at asanchezTFH.com. Joe Zarate, age 68, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, August 19th. He was born to Paul and Trinidad Zarate on October 12, 1954, in Midland. He graduated from Midland High School and worked most of his career as a grocery manager at Albertsons. He married Sharon Thompson on December 21, 1974, and they would have celebrated their 49th wedding anniversary this year. Together, they have three kids. Joe was preceded in death by his parents, by his brother Rodolfo Zarate, nephew Rodolfo Zarate Jr., niece Palsy Zarate, and precious great-grandchild Errol Muniz. Joe was survived by his wife Sharon, his son Joey Zarate, and wife Jessica of New Braunfels, daughters Julia Lujan and husband Edward, and Christina Acevedo and husband Jaime, all of Midland, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A public visitation for Joe will be held Friday, August 25th, from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas, 79705. A rosary will occur Friday, August 25th at 6 p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home. A breakfast reception will occur Saturday, August 26th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Ellis Funeral Home. A funeral mass will occur on Saturday, August 26th at 12 p.m. at San Miguel Archangel Catholic Church, 1100 Camp Street, Midland, with a burial to follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street in Midland.
Here is the Dear Ibe column that appeared in the Midland Reported Telegram on Thursday, August 24th. Boyfriend in no hurry to walk down the aisle. Dear Ibe, I'm 44 and I have been dating a wonderful man for the last year and a half. He's 44 as well. He has a nice home and job and has 50-50 custody of his three children, who adore me. I'm good to them, and we all get along well, just like a family. The problem is, he goes back and forth about marriage. I have made it clear that, although I have no desire to pressure him, I do want to be married again one day. I said I'd rather be let go than led on. He said he isn't sure, and some days he says he may never remarry. The last time we talked about it, he said it's a possibility, but he didn't want to be pressured. It has to be his idea. How long should I wait until I say enough is enough? I'm not getting any younger. Signed, Fixed on Marriage. Dear Fixed, When was the last time you had this discussion? You have described a man who is comfortable with things just the way they are. A year and a half is a reasonable amount of time to decide whether a relationship is serious enough to lead to something more. Give him 6 more months, during which you do not mention the word marriage. By then, you will have invested 2 years. After that, ask if he has made up his mind about the two of you being married, and if his answer is anything less than yes, move on. Dear Abby, I have a family issue concerning the recent untimely death of my only younger brother, who died of pneumonia in Georgia. His wife had him cremated the following day instead of having a funeral. She didn't inform his immediate family about it until it was over. Was that legal? And was it the right thing to do? Signed, No Family Closure. Dear No Family Closure, please accept my sympathy for the passing of your younger brother. When the sibling is younger, the loss can be particularly poignant. When a married individual dies, it is legal for the surviving spouse to determine what will happen to their loved one's remains. We don't know if the subject of funerals, memorials, burials, or cremations was ever discussed between your brother and his wife. If you are wondering, rather than judge her, ask her. He may have expressed a wish not to be put into the ground, or he may have been cremated for financial reasons. While you are at it, ask if she's planning any kind of memorial. If she isn't planning anything, you may want to host one for yourselves. Dear Abby, do I give my daughter her baby book now that she's in her 40s? Does the same answer apply to a son? I just need to know if it's something a parent does. Signed, Wondering Mom. Dear Wondering, some parents give their children these mementos when they are downsizing their homes. Others offer it to them once they marry, settle down, or prove they are responsible enough that it won't be lost. Of course, before bestowing such a gift, it would be prudent to ask if it would be welcomed.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, August 24th. Gore off to new challenges at UTPB. When she leaves Odessa College for University of Texas, Permian Basin, at the end of August, Jackie Gore's role will be similar, but more focused on community outreach and partnerships. That is my favorite thing to do, work with the community, bring industry to the students. That's what my focus area will be at UTPB. When I saw this job opportunity, it really spoke to me as far as the things I really do enjoy, said Gore, who has been at OC for almost 5 years. The job that she will have at UTPB, Vice President of Community Engagement and Partnerships, is newly created. Her first day will be September 1st. Her last day at OC is August 31st. Previously, Gore has been at Medical Center Hospital from April 2010 to November 2018. And before that, at Odessa Regional Medical Center, January 1999 to April 2010, as Director of Communications and Marketing in a one-person department. That was such a great role for me early in my career because I was a one-person department for many years. Gore said she had one employee her last year there. At UTPB, Gore said President Sandra Woodley and the administration team are determining that staff members will be part of the community engagement and outreach team. Gore said she has learned something everywhere she's been and that she's been blessed to work with and for some amazing leaders in our community. Odessa College is a special place. When I first talked to President Dr. Gregory Williams about joining this team, he asked me, why do you want to work at Odessa College? I've learned that's a common question Dr. Williams asks every soon-to-be new employee. I told him I wanted to learn what the secret sauce was here at Odessa College because I had worked alongside Odessa College leaders in my healthcare roles, Gore said. Odessa College was growing. It has been recognized on a national level, just such a dynamic team, and I wanted to know, what is the secret sauce? What is this winning mentality? Where's that coming from? I quickly learned in my first few months there that it's the culture, she added. Everything they do at OC is completely focused on student success, Gore said. It doesn't matter what the employee's role is, they all have the same mantra. They will take new students where they need to go to register, find scholarships, or wherever they need to go. She added that she's ready to get started at UTPB. One of the things I will be doing in my new role at UTPB is serving as liaison with the area school districts and with the area community colleges. I'm really excited that I'll get to continue working with Odessa College. A great foundation has already been laid in the partnership. Odessa College works very closely with UT Permian Basin and ECISD. It's going to take that close working relationship to make a difference in our community, and using that same format across the region to do what we need to do to help students have the opportunity to seek higher education, Gore said. She'll work primarily with Odessa College, Midland College, and Howard College, but there could be others with the larger territory. Woodley said she's happy to have Gore join UTPB. Jackie is a unique talent, and her experience and passion for the community will enhance UTPB's impact in our region. Her role will be focused on how we connect and serve our many partners in the Permian Basin. I am thrilled to have her as part of our team, Woodley said in an email. There are many projects that Gore spearheaded that will continue. All of the capital campaigns are still in progress. The Wood Health Sciences Building, the Odessa College Downtown, James Segrest Stadium, and a new academic building on campus, Gore said. There also will be an academic building downtown. On campus, the academic building will be Wilkerson 2. We've made ask to donors in all different shapes, Gore said. A bridge over University Boulevard is a newer project that she hadn't started working on for donors for yet. But that's going to be an important project as these new buildings open because we'll have a parking issue. The goal is to have the bridge built so that employees can park on the north side of University over in the Greg Williams Hall parking lot and free up the parking lot for the Wood Health Sciences Building. It's on track to be finished this time next year, Gore said. Chief of Staff Robert Rivas and Lindsay Bryant, Executive Assistant to the President, will oversee the Office of Institutional Advancement after Gore's departure and continue to be the primary contacts for community partners and donors. Then, of course, Donna Witte, who is our Office of Institutional Advancement Admin Assistant. She works with donors on a daily basis as well. She'll still be there in the office answering telephone calls, responding to contributions. I think we'll have a really smooth transition. And, of course, Dr. Greg Williams. He's a primary contact for many Odessa College partners and donors who customarily contact him directly. He's built a very strong relationship with partners over his 17 years at Odessa College. These relationships are stronger than ever, Gore said. Odessa College Honors comes up on November 8th. Invitations are about to go out. Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray will be named Outstanding Educator. Chris Cole, President and Chief Operating Officer of Southwest Bank, will be named Outstanding Individual. And Andrews ISD will be honored with a Community Impact Award, Gore said. The family atmosphere is what she said she'll have will miss about leaving OC. Everybody is here for one another and truly pitches in when we have big projects. Our department helps other areas when they have something big happening and vice versa. I experienced it personally when my mom passed away in January. The OC community really rallied around me and my family, and I'll always be grateful for that. She added, Gore knows quite a few people at UTPB and probably more than she realizes. I think of a lot of Dr. Woodley and the administration team, the faculty members and the coaches that I know there are wonderful people. I'm looking forward to being part of their culture and part of their team as well, she added. Gore grew up in Odessa and attended Odessa College and Midland College. Her first class at OC was a typing course, which her mother made her take. She earned a bachelor's degree in journalism from Southwest Texas State University, now Texas State University. I felt comfortable coming to Odessa College because I had been on this campus. I also attended Midland College and worked on the newspaper staff there. Then I went on to Southwest Texas, which is now Texas State, and I worked on the newspaper staff there, and I had a lot of fun, Gore said. She returned home and worked at CVA Advertising for Craig Van Amberg. She also worked for him while attending MC as well. She and her husband Mark have two daughters, Sydney and Hannah. Gore is proud that both young women are college graduates and have chosen to start their careers at Midland, Odessa. Sydney is working as the marketing coordinator at Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, and Hannah is working as a marketing coordinator and EF Outfitters manager at Sewell Family of Companies. Hannah played soccer at UTPB for 3 years and graduated in May with a communications degree. Gore said she had a wonderful experience living on campus and playing soccer. She loved her professors and met students from all over the world. Sydney graduated from Texas Tech University in May 2021 with a degree in marketing. She is currently pursuing her MBA with UTPB. Hands on the Loom, Dena Textiles Past and Present. Midland, the Museum of Southwest is delighted to present Hands on the Loom, Dena Textiles Past and Present. Native America textiles are embedded in American popular culture. From Pendleton to Urban Outfitters, Navajo blanket patterns have been incorporated into clothing, blankets, and other products for Western consumption. This appropriation is not new. Since the 1800s, American trade post owners have been pushing indigenous peoples to change their designs and create work for a tourist audience. During the displacement of the Dena people from Arizona to New Mexico in 1863, Navajo women began making tourist versions of their blankets as a source of income. When they were relocated back to their homeland 5 years later, this production continued. In a subtle change of color and pattern, prized chiefs' blankets were transformed into souvenirs. Western traders further influenced blanket production by giving their own ideas for patterns, thereby replacing the traditional meaning behind the blankets, a press release said. The exhibition will open at 5:30 p.m. Thursday, August 24th, with a conversation between the artists Venacio Argon, Kevin Aspas, and Velma Key Craig, moderated by guest curator Jennifer Garliadi. Registration for this event can be found online at museumsw.org/events and is open to the public. For more information, please contact events@museumsw.org. This exhibition surveys the commodification of Navajo blankets from the 1800s through the contemporary moment. This exhibition also highlights some ways in which artists are now reclaiming their medium and changing viewer perspectives. Some of these artists work outright to take back their traditional patterns and weaving techniques. Others push the limits of their textiles while rediscovering patterns as abstract forms. Sparklight donates Chromebooks to Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, in keeping with the company's commitment to bridging the digital divide in the communities it serves. Sparklight, a leading broadband provider, recently donated 50 Chromebooks to the Boys and Girls Club of the Permian Basin in Odessa. These Chromebooks from Sparklight will allow us to expand our programming for youth and enable our kids to access a wide array of educational content via our My Future platform, said Andrew Jones, Executive Director of Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, in a press release. The Chromebooks will also help us to enhance staff training so that we can meet the needs of our kids more effectively. Thank you, Sparklight, for this incredible opportunity. Over the past 9 years, Sparklight has donated nearly 3,000 Chromebooks to schools and community centers across its footprint, the release said. We recognize the critical importance that access to technology plays in helping ensure the children in our community achieve academic success, Sparklight Regional General Manager Jonathan Briscoe said in the release. Helping our local Boys and Girls Clubs increase access to technology for students and community members will improve education and benefit the communities where we live and work for the long term. Through educational programs and donations of time and resources, Sparklight seeks to make a positive impact in the cities and towns it serves, concentrating its support in the areas of education and digital literacy, food insecurity, and community development. The donation of these laptops is an extension of existing corporate social responsibility efforts by the Cable One family of brands, Sparklight, Fidelity Communications, Hargray, ValueNet Fiber, and Cable America, the release said. Other corporate social responsibility efforts supported by Cable One include supporting national organizations dedicated to advancing education and diversity, including the Emma Bowen Foundation and the National Diversity Council. Supporting the mission of Special Olympics, which provides year-round sports training and athletic competition in a variety of Olympic-type sports, as well as health, arts, leadership, and advocacy programs for children and adults with intellectual disabilities. Planting trees through the Arbor Day Foundation on behalf of customers who switch to paperless billing. Since 2015, the company has planted 130,000 trees in its markets and national forests within the company's footprint. Supporting the mission of Keep America Beautiful in cleaning up and beautifying communities across the U.S., raising funds for Feed My Starving Children to make a difference in the lives of hungry kids around the world. Since 2018, Cable One has donated more than 46 tons of food to local food banks and nearly $400,000 to address food insecurity. The Charitable Giving Fund annually awards $250,000 in grants to local 501c3 nonprofit organizations served by the Cable One family of brands. Nonprofit organizations may apply for grants during open application periods each spring and fall. Applications for fall 2023 grants will be accepted between October 1st through 31st. For more information about the Sparklight Charitable Giving Fund, please visit sparklight.com/charitable-giving. Audition set for OC Fall Production. Odessa College will host auditions for its fall production, Wouldn't It Be Lovely, A Modern Fairy Tale, this week. The production is an adaptation of Pygmalion and the stage musical My Fair Lady. Community members, Odessa College students, faculty, and staff are welcome to try out. Auditions will be held at the Globe Theater, 2308 Shakespeare Road, Odessa. Dates and times are Thursday, August 24th, 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Friday, August 25th, 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, August 26th, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday, August 27th, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Annular Solar Eclipse Viewing Extravaganza in Odessa. Prepare to witness a celestial spectacle of epic proportions as an annular solar eclipse graces the skies over Odessa on October 24th. This rare astronomical phenomenon, where the moon partially covers the sun, leaving a brilliant ring of fire visible, will cast its glow across North, Central, and South America. Odessa finds itself in the path of this event. Discover Odessa, the premier guide to the city's attractions, things to do, events, and much more, has everything you need to know to prepare for this rare annular solar eclipse, a news release said. The organization is curating a comprehensive list of events, specials, and attractions for businesses to showcase their offerings during this momentous weekend. Businesses are encouraged to submit their event details, whether it's an eclipse-themed viewing party, food and drink specials, hotel discounts, or any other unique experience that aligns with the spirit of the occasion. All these exciting events and exclusive offers will be prominently featured on the Discover Odessa website at discoverodessa.org/eclipse. This dedicated page will provide essential information about the annular solar eclipse, including precise viewing times and safety precautions. Additionally, a carefully crafted annular solar eclipse playlist will be available to set the perfect mood for your eclipse drive or viewing party. Sunrise service to honor mass shooting victims. To honor those impacted by the mass shooting 4 years ago, University of Texas Permian Basin is hosting the Shine a Light Sunrise Service at 7 a.m. August 31st under the Mesa Deck at UTPB. August 31st is the date of the shooting in which 7 people were killed and 25 injured. Gunman Seth Ator was traveling between Midland and Odessa, was shot and killed by multiple law enforcement agencies as they made a final stand in the field nearby Synergy Theater on Highway 191. The Bright Star Memorial will be placed for the Permian Basin community to gather and reflect while enhancing the university's campus transformation efforts, which coincide with UTPB's 50th anniversary, the UTPB website details. The memorial will feature the names of all those who were killed or injured and reflections from family members.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.